This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Sunday morning, and we have been talking tourism on November the 15th because we have a UK-UAE corridor. The quarantine rules are gone. What does that actually mean for people moving back and forth? Plus, having a look at Emirates' latest results, the airline has posted its first half-year loss, first half-year loss, even, if that makes sense, in its history. We get some expert opinion on that as well. Plus, Diwali-nomics. What does coronavirus mean for celebrations for the Festival of Light this year? All of that, plus Serena Kelly has been in with your COVID numbers and rules.
Ask Serena.
With Fragoman, dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide.
Oh, a lot of holiday questions for you, Serena. You're basically going to act as a booking agent for the next 7 minutes. But before we get into that, let's kick off the week with the way we always do, with the numbers.
Right. So on Thursday, we were looking at 1,136 new cases of COVID-19. Friday, 1,226. Yesterday, they announced 1,174 new cases of the virus in the country. That's after more than 125,900 tests were conducted across the UAE. So total confirmed reported cases now stands at 149,135. So if we break the figure down for you, that includes 528 fatalities. No fatalities reported in the last 24 hours. 678 recoveries yesterday. So we now have a total of 142,561 recoveries. And active cases have gone up, 6,046 active cases currently. And just looking globally, we've crossed more than 54 million reported cases internationally, out of which more than 15.1 million are active. Fatalities, more than 1.3 million, and recovered, more than 37.8 million people.
Right. Yes, and the US numbers as well, I think, this weekend. A lot of people paying attention to those ahead of Thanksgiving. Let's have a look at where people might be celebrating Christmas this year, because we've got some changes, haven't we? Some changes with the UK and some changes with the Omani border.
Yeah. So starting with the UK, so the UAE is among several countries that have been taken off the UK's quarantine list. This means travellers will not have to self-isolate for 2 weeks upon arrival in the country. The measures came into effect early Saturday morning, but were announced Thursday evening. And it's really timely because you guys just had Dubai expat Paula Jacobson on your show, and she was behind the petition to the British government to create that travel corridor between the UAE and the UK. So to remove that mandatory 14-day quarantine for visitors. Meanwhile, Britain's transport minister said he would be making an announcement on changes to the 14-day quarantine rule for travellers into the country very soon, kind of giving the impression that they would be shortening it in general for those who could show a negative COVID-19 test result on arrival. But again, we'll be keeping across that for you because there's been no announcements made there. But definitely some positive news for the UAE and the UK there.
Yeah. Here's one question for you. Can you give me more information on the UK quarantine? Does that mean we can go back for Christmas?
It's looking likely. Obviously, a lot of people will be waiting to hear what happens after December 2nd, because obviously you've got pretty much lockdown in place in the UK currently right now. And that's only supposed to be in effect until December 2nd, where they want to ease those restrictions to allow for families basically to get together over the Christmas period. So we will be keeping it across the information for you.
Yeah, and we've been asking people this morning if they are going to take advantage of that. Tom's kids already packed.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think their minds are off there after they heard the news on Thursday night, because the flights have been booked. It's really weird, because last week we were talking about the fact that, you know, we didn't think it would be feasible or anything like that for them to do it. But, the flights have been booked for yonks, for over a year.
Yeah.
We haven't got around to cancelling it as yet. And then this change. So
I think it's really important, the time factor, because it's giving people that chance or that time to either take advantage of flight opportunities where there may be good prices to travel, and making that decision saying, yep, I'm going to take the kids, we're going to go and head back and see family.
It's interesting, because when we had Paula on Thursday, and you know,
this is the Miss Petition.
Miss Petition, yeah. Paula Jacobson, who we'll be speaking to this hour, actually, getting an update from her. But when we did that, we got a couple of text messages coming in as well saying, oh, yeah, see, True Colours coming out there. It's all about Christmas. It's not about business, blah, blah, blah.
Christmas is business.
Yes,
Christmas
they go hand in hand.
Yeah, and it sort of... It sort of has shone through by a number of the comments that you've got. Not just the comments of people going, yay, look, we get to go back to the UK. And again, I appreciate to all of our international listeners out there, that's not everyone's favourite destination of choice. But, you know, it is a busy route to and from, not just for Brits and for those based in the UAE, but also for those looking to get back into Australia, New Zealand and other parts of the world, using it as a stepping stone. But as we've just heard as well from Orkin as well, it's the other way. It's the backflow. And I've seen a huge amount of that. You know, friends of ours, people that we know around this table, texting me over the weekend saying, look, just seen the corridor. We're booked. We're coming out next week. Been missing brunches far too much. Lockdown's pretty miserable here. Going to spend the rest of the lockdown over there. So it's a two-way street, yeah. This thing. So yeah. And it does generate business.
Yeah, because basically it means that they come out, then they don't have to
quarantine when you
exactly.
get back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference. Yeah.
It does. And I mean, I feel quite crass saying, you know, Christmas is business, but we are a tourism economy, partly here. There's a lot of spin that goes around that on Christmas, whether that's clothes, foods, gifts, what have you. We are going to be talking in this hour actually about Diwali-nomics, because again, another big spending period is the festival of Diwali for people who are celebrating it today, or indeed for people who celebrated it yesterday, Saturday, day off work. There are some fantastic outfits floating around the studios here at the Rehoboam Radio Network. But there is spend there. Does a more subdued Diwali with coronavirus mean people are putting their hands in their pockets less? Or are they trying to make themselves feel better and maybe even spending a little bit more?
And hopefully you'll have maybe some Omani citizens coming and spending some in the country here in the UAE as well.
Because that's your other border, isn't it?
Yep. Starting tomorrow, November 16th, citizens from Oman will be allowed to cross into the UAE via land borders. There are precautionary measures that need to be followed. So according to the tweets from NCMA and the Federal Authority for Identity and Citizenship, citizens of Oman will not need prior approval to enter the Emirates. They will need a negative PCR test result from an accredited lab. Results should not exceed 48 hours from the date of the test. Another PCR test will be conducted upon arrival into the UAE. And then another PCR test will be required if they're still visiting the Emirates on the 4th day. Those entering need to download the Al Hosn app, and they will also need to follow the quarantine procedures in place. Like, for example, other Emirates, Abu Dhabi, any arrivals from outside the country need to quarantine for 14 days. Now, in case a person tests positive at the port, they will be denied entry. Oman is not yet open for international tourism. They are not issuing visas still, but air travel is allowed in and out of the country. So that's for citizens, residents, GCC nationals and foreign diplomats. That resumed early October. So we're still waiting to hear what it means about from our side heading into Oman. But technically, those categories, they can get on a flight and get across into Oman. But yep, some great news for Omani citizens being able to come into the UAE.
Okay, a couple more minutes with you. You're talking about flight. Tell me what's happening in Abu Dhabi.
So with Abu Dhabi, you've got the international airport there. They're trialling and testing a new artificial intelligence powered system called Smart Travel. So the system, developed in partnership with Convergent AI, it's going to improve your journey across a variety of processes, but taking into account COVID-19 precautionary measures. One of the main changes we'll see: select passengers traveling with Etihad Airways given a specific time for them to arrive at the airport. So this will stagger passengers' arrival and help prevent overcrowding.
Okay, Serena Kelly, thank you very much.
More details on the Aero News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Remind me what we're calling this, Brandy. This is Diwali-nomics, is that right?
Yeah, Richard just likes to stick a nomics on the back of anything that he can get away with.
Okay.
But Diwali-nomics works.
Well, there might be an element of Biden-nomics as well to throw into this one, and other reasons as well. I suppose the question we are asking this morning is, in light of the ongoing Diwali celebrations, which came to a head last night but continue today, has Diwali and other options lit up demand among the UAE's gold shoppers and the jewellery market as a whole? We don't have the answers, but thankfully we have got one of the leading and most respected voices within the industry joining us now. He's the Managing Director of Siroya Jewellers, but also he holds the position of Vice Chairman of the Dubai Gold and Jewellery Group. It is a warm welcome and a good morning to Chandu Siroya, who joins us this morning. Chandu, good morning.
Good morning to you and to all our listeners.
Happy Diwali.
I wish everybody listening to us very, very happy Diwali. And today starts the beginning of the new year, the Hindu calendar. So we say a happy and a prosperous new year to everybody.
Indeed. No, our sentiments exactly. Now, you obviously have been celebrating socially and responsibly at the moment, but you've also been crunching the numbers that have been coming through from the market. How much of an impact and a well-needed impact has Diwali had on not just gold, but the jewellery market as a whole?
I believe the markets are very buoyant right now. You see, there is two reasons. One is the celebratory spirit and the festive spirit. Generally, traditionally, every Hindu tries to buy some gold during this time because it's a very auspicious time to buy gold. And this time there was a double whammy because the price had gone down by almost $100. So they got a very good bargain. In fact, towards the end of yesterday, on Friday, not yesterday, Friday, the price jumped up again by $10, $12, but that was okay. The demand was fantastic. I think in terms of numbers, we were almost, I would say, 70 to 80% of last year's Diwali demand for those 2 or 3 days. Overall, year on year for the particular period, I would say we were about 80%. Surprisingly, the demand for diamond jewelry was very, very good. In fact, it was better than gold, and everybody did good numbers in the diamond jewelry also.
So I suppose the next question is this just in line with what's been going on over the weekend, the celebrations for Diwali, or do you see this as a precursor to a better 6 months, possibly 12 months coming on? Is this the jump start we need?
I believe, yes, it could be a jump start. Things have started easing. People have started becoming a little less wary of the effects of the pandemic because of the positive news of the vaccinations. Mm. And I believe the UAE has provided us a very safe environment. And the numbers, though, have been steady, but the fear has gone out. You see, it was the fear which was more important to control, and that has been controlled. People are very sensible. They are using good practices of social distancing, even in the stores. If you saw, everybody was wearing masks. People were not rushing into stores. If there was a little rush, people were waiting outside. So everybody has become sensible. And I believe this is the beginning of a new era for all of us, not only in the jewelry trade, but every trade, I believe.
So you mentioned there that the fear factor, which has prevented people voting with their feet, coming out, visiting the stores, etc. There's also been a very high gold price until recently. Has that put people off? And then the softening of that gold price recently, did that convince more people to get back involved in the market?
Yes, that is one of the factors. But you see, what has been happening is since the lockdown started in the early parts of the year, people did not buy any jewelry. There were festivals which were postponed. There were marriages, weddings which were postponed. And this being the most auspicious period of the time, we are having a very busy festive season and also marriage season coming up. Marriages are going to be there for every nationality, every religion. So everybody has to buy gold. So why not now? And the gold price is fantastic for it.
What's going to happen with the gold price at the moment? You mentioned there was a softening before Diwali. The demand has actually seen the price go up a little bit more. Are we expected to see gold rise or dive in the coming days, in the coming weeks?
I wish I could predict that. But the trends are that gold is going to remain fairly stable. We could see a little bit of a dip, but eventually there is going to be a little increase. I would say, if you ask me plus or minus, which one better, I would say plus is a better chance. I think gold prices tend to going higher. As things subside, there will be a little ease in pressure, but I still believe we are not going to see too many lows.
We've talked about, or we've touched on, Diwali-nomics, as we've called it here. What about the Bidenomics as well? Because there are some suggestions in the market that a Joe Biden presidency has also soothed the markets and given a little bit more reassurance. Anything in that?
Yes, sure. In fact, last month when I spoke, I also said that once the political pressures ease, everything will ease. People will start looking at things in a little different way. As the leader of the world, America is very responsible, and I'm sure they will take the right steps to strengthen world economies and not only think about themselves right now.
You mentioned there that diamonds had shone through in the last couple of days of trading, obviously demand for gold as well. That's great to hear for the market, but who's buying at the moment? We've talked about the lack of tourists in this city at the moment, in the region at the moment. Is that having an impact on the souks, on the markets, or are the residents picking up because they're not going anywhere?
No, the residents are also picking up. We are having a little bit of tourists coming from India. Mm-hmm. Being the Diwali holidays, we have seen a big number of tourists coming from India. In fact, UAE is one of the only two places which are welcoming tourists. So anybody who is looking for a holiday is more than welcome here, and they have already started coming here. If you see the occupancy in the hotels, they are going up. The restaurants are all full. So people are going out, and what better thing to buy than jewelry, because this is one of the best investments you could do.
Mm. Chandu, really appreciate your time. Great to hear that there is a positivity out there in the market, prompted by Diwali, Biden, and much, much more. Huge thanks to Chandu Saroya. Chandu is the Managing Director of Saroya Jewellers, also the Vice Chairman and the of Dubai Gold and Jewellery Group. So good to hear that people are back out and shopping.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Taking a look at some of the international stories that have grabbed my attention and grabbed some of the headlines. Forget yet all you can eat buffet. What about the all you can stay? The all you can stay resort package has now is now a thing, a new offer from the adults only. And don't read that the wrong way. It's just it doesn't welcome kids. All right. This is another venue over in the over in the Maldives. It's called the Anantara Veli. So another product from Anantara, which just caters for grown-ups. They're going to allow travellers to use the resort as a personal vacation crash pad. But apparently it's going to cost you as well. $30,000 is my asking price to you. That's the package. Covers the use of a two-person overwater bungalow at the private island property for unlimited use during 2021.
Of the whole year?
Yeah. Airport transfers, breakfast thrown in for good measure. There's going to be discounts on add-ons, which include spa treatments. You've got cooking lessons, bits and pieces. Pretty hefty, but basically it's your timeshare, if you like. So if the bungalow is available in 2021 and you want to jet off there, you can get there if you've paid your 30 grand up front. Clever.
Okay. Okay. But people presumably have got jobs. They can't just hang out in the Maldives for 12 months.
What if you're working from home? Work from the Maldives.
Good point.
I mean, I think the thinking behind this is that people are not going to be spending the entire year there. But if you looked at it as a little getaway for several points during the year, if you've got airport transfers, flights and all thrown in, it's not a bad option. $30,000 is what gets you the package for your little pad in paradise for 2021.
There you go. Funnily enough, I've been looking at some work from home. There's no shortage of work from home surveys at the moment, is it? I mean, that's what people are doing in their spare time, is they are conducting polls on what it's like to work from home. A new one from Morning Brew, which is a financial website and newsletter. They've been looking...
Not just a greeting in South Africa.
More, no, or a cup of coffee. So Morning Brew have done a poll with the guys at Harris about whether or not people are getting healthier during work from home. Answer, a surprising Yes, we joke about the COVID kilos, but two-thirds of people who are working remotely, 67%, say that they reckon their whole lifestyle has gotten healthier since working from home. 41%, so around 2 in 5, say that they've been eating healthier snacks during the day, no vending machine. And around roughly about the same, 38%, say that they've been cooking their meals more because they're working from home.
Okay.
I've certainly been cooking more being at home rather than going out, or at least I was, not so much now, but 3 or 4 months ago definitely was. Healthier snacks, though, not so sure.
Not sure about the healthier snacks, and I think you're probably eating more. It's interesting because that goes back to the Premier Foods thing that we were talking about earlier, this nostalgia eating trend in the UK where people are indulging in things like Bisto and Mr. Kipling's and Ambrosia custards and things like that, because people are not getting their calories out. They're not going, you know, ordinarily you treat yourself at lunch, you treat yourself for a mid-afternoon, etc. Now you're doing everything, well, a lot of people are doing things at home, and therefore they're calorie busting at home as opposed to getting their calories outside. And plus, you've just got access to the fridge. You know, if you go to a vending machine, you've got to put money into the vending machine. If you go to a cafe, you've got to give them money. If you go to a fridge, you don't have to give your fridge money just to open and give your food, do you?
Where do you think the food comes from, Tom?
I know. It's a full fridge, you know. But, you know, I don't have to give you 27 dirhams just to get... I don't know what I can get
sandwich.
From the fridge. Yeah, sandwich. So, yeah.
And it is conveniently right there behind you at all times. Don't
it
even
is.
Have to walk down the road. Speaking of calories in, calories out, that's a good point, actually. You're not exactly burning anything walking back and from the fridge, are you?
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And if you cast your mind back to the beginning of the weekend, which already feels about 100 years ago, we did get some very important earnings. It's earnings seasons at the moment. We've got District Cooling's earnings out. We've got earnings out from the guys at Julfa Gulf Pharmaceuticals. But Emirates is one of the biggies. Earnings that, by the way, they don't actually have to release because they're not a listed company, but they do. And its half-year results have shown their first half-year loss since the airline was founded. A loss for the first half of 14 billion dirhams. We're going to put that in context now with Orkan Altinatis, who is the Director of Mobility, Regional Airspace and Defence at Frost and Sullivan. Orkan, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Very good morning, Brandy.
How much of a surprise were these results to you? Or not?
Actually, not so much of a surprise. I mean, it is very historic in terms of Emirates. I'm unfortunately in the opposite direction of what we would like to see and certainly what we have been used to seeing with Emirates. But I think it's just an indication of where the industry is at the moment globally. As you have mentioned, I mean, this is the first loss for the Emirates Group in more than 30 years. The last time was 1987, 1988, and that was mostly due to setup costs of the airline as it was launching. But if we look into the numbers at the moment, it really shows to great extent, you know, how the aviation industry is suffering. It isn't really that much different anywhere else. I mean, you know, capacity having been cut by 91% over the last 6 months. If you look at the Emirates Group numbers, a whopping 74% reduction down to 3.8 billion in 3.7 billion in revenues and 3.8 billion losses for the first 6 months of the financial year. This is comparing to $320 million of profit versus last year, same period last year. Emirates Airline, as the biggest part of the group, is again by 75%. It's down to 3.2 billion in revenues, and it's a 3.4 billion loss for the airline again, compared to 235 million profit against last year. I think if you look at it from a different perspective, we're looking at 95% reduction in the number of passengers that have been carried in the last 6 months. To put that into context, Emirates last year carried 1.5 million passengers in just over 9 days' worth of operations under normal circumstances. So it took 6 months to be able to carry only 1.5 million passengers. And equally important to see is the seat load factor. So obviously, you know, load factor is the uptake of the capacity that the airline puts out onto the market. Last year was 81%, which was very respectable. And this year it was just short of 39%. So these numbers are massive numbers in terms of the performance of the airline. But as I said, it's actually, it was expected. And obviously Emirates is a big company. It's a big group. And it's not really surprised by the level of the losses at the moment that we have seen.
I mean, you mentioned there, as you say, this is a global issue, but Emirates is one of the giants of the industry. How do its results echo what we're seeing elsewhere, and how do they differ?
Well, overall, we do see negative results coming out from all over the world, from all the airlines. There are certain small exceptions. However, all of the airline groupings are suffering at the moment. Just to look around the world, for example, Air France KLM Group, their first half revenues are down by 73%. This is for the exact comparable period of March to September for the first 6 months of the financial year. So Lufthansa is down by 76% to 5.2 billion in revenues. Turkish Airlines, one of the biggest competitors of Emirates in terms of the global traffic and, you know, the business model that they are going after, they're down by 67% to 2.4 billion. So certainly Emirates is not alone in these market conditions. If we look, for example, to China, two of the three largest Chinese carriers, Air China and China Eastern, they had reductions of 56 and 57% respectively. The reason for that is I think China has started recovering earlier than the rest of the world. They certainly started reinstating their domestic flights back in April and May. So their hard hits are lesser than what the other airlines are. But the end of the day, everybody's losing at the moment. Everybody's losing a lot of money at the moment. And that's something that we're seeing across the industry, unfortunately.
Okay, quickly, Orkan, because we've only got a couple of minutes with you. I want to squeeze a lot in. We hear a lot about cargo. How much is it really offsetting the lack of passengers?
Well, it is true that cargo is actually has increased in importance for airlines, especially over the last 6 months. But again, cargo alone is not enough to really save the financial results. Obviously, traditionally, passenger revenue is the biggest contributor to revenues. And just as an example, for Emirates, they have seen their tonnage decreasing by only 35% compared to last year. But they have seen their yields at a whopping 106% higher. So, you know, that is due to obviously a reduction in passenger flights across the world that took away the belly capacity that you see in the passenger aircraft, leading to a global shortage. So as flights start getting reinstated, as links start getting reestablished, we will see that going down. And for many airlines, cargo has been the biggest earner, actually, for the last 6 months. But again, in itself, it's not sufficient to move the airlines back into black.
Okay, 1 minute, Orkan. The UAE is now off the UK quarantine list. How much of a difference will that make for passenger traffic?
I mean, it's definitely a step in the right direction. Absolutely, no doubt about that. But I think what we are likely to see at the moment is more demand picking up from the UAE to the UK, at least until the 2nd of December. And from the 2nd of December, I think we will see traffic originating from the UK coming here. And it was discussed already earlier in your program. So we will see an increase, we will see changes, but I think we have to wait until the 2nd of December. What I believe we may in fact see is a higher number of tourists potentially coming from the UK, simply because now is probably the best time to be in the UAE in terms of weather and also in terms of the level of lockdown that we have, at least level of restrictions. And also the British holidaymakers, they're restricted at the moment with their choices for their holidays. So we may actually, in fact, see higher numbers of tourists coming from the UK after the 2nd of December, assuming that, you know, the restrictions are not extended past 2nd of December.
Okay, super quick, 30 seconds left. What is going to get flight back to some semblance of normal? Is it a vaccine? Is it global testing protocols? Is it just virus eradication?
Vaccine is a big, big part of it. Just to give you an indication, just in the last 1 week, once the announcement has been made by Pfizer and BioNTech, about the vaccine and the successful developments, the airline stocks rallied by 12% in expectation of stronger future bookings. So vaccine will be a key part of this, but this will be gradually seen across the world. Of course, logistics of this will be key, and that is something that we have been looking at very extensively at Frost & Sullivan. So as the vaccine becomes available more widely, it will actually affect the demand for air travel again. So it will get better next year, but we're still 3 to 4 years away from going back to what we would call normal, which is pre-COVID 2019 levels.
Okay, 3 to 4 years. Orkan Altıntaş, Director of Mobility for Regional Airspace and Defence at Frost and Sullivan. Thank you for your time.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.